wonder just what I'm fighting for. I win some battle, but I always lose a war. I keep right on scuffling in this no man's land I am. But I know, yes I know, there must be a better world somewhere. Flying high.
Okay.
Some joker clips my wings just 'cause he gets his kicks.
That was Malcolm John Rebenack, also known as Dr. John, who was a favorite of mine, actually. An award-winning and legendary purveyor of voodoo rock, New Orleans music, and Bayou blues, with one of his signature songs, There Must Be a Better World Somewhere. He died yesterday suffering a heart attack. He was 77 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead, and we are continuing this conversation that we began with mostly me talking. Our phones are going to be ready next week, I'm told. But looking at a way to reorganize our thinking and our political actions, given the fact that we see the writing on the wall, and we see that it will call for not just a marginalization of many groups, but outright, you know, they just are going to be nullified. They'll be set aside as being completely irrelevant and unimportant. They'll be powerless, and they will have no say in the forward thrust of our society because, well, they have no power. And how are people with no power, no real power, going to pose a threat to the status quo? If you've been paying attention, and I'm sure you have, the status is in fact very much quo and getting worse every day. And that's why I raised the idea of us just getting out of this trap that we're in. We're in the trap of talking and not doing. Because we really, maybe it's because we psychologically want so much to belong in, quote, society, unquote, that we denigrate ourselves and we accept our own self-denigration. We should not, I mean, if we were to put some logic to this, we should not in any way be connected to any party. All the parties seem to be the same. And at some point, we ought to come to a decision as to the relevance of the party, the capacity of the party to create change, or any party, and where our specific interests are concerned. One, are they likely to recognize that in fact these are very important interests and should be paid attention to? And two, whether it is that they have matured enough to see the United States for what it really is. It is not what they sell us the myth of the great democracy. That's not it. So we are caught in a kind of time warp. We are going along to get along. It hasn't worked so far. It is not working still. And still we keep going along to get along. Why would we want to be in these elections? Why would we want to be part of the so-called fabric of society? If we see how frayed the fabric is, this is not our doing. The United States has declined not because people have made an effort to bring it back up, to support its, as I said, a forward thrust, that it can go on to do great things in the world. It chooses not to. And as we see with the Trump administration and President Trump, sometimes it's because they just are not the kinds of leaders who would be suitable to leading a country in the right direction. They don't know about that. They have no history of conducting themselves in other parts of their lives that way. Donald Trump doesn't know about fairness and what is right and what should happen to give everybody a fair break. That's not the mindset he comes from. The mindset he comes from is all belongs to me personally, and I want you to have nothing. This is a mentality. This is a political mentality as well. There is a deep-seated resentment when push comes to shove, that people have to deal with what politics really is, what leadership really requires. But if, as this country is and began and was born of the crucible of slaughter, let's kill all the people we don't want, let's take the land as our own. This entire country belongs to us. And that kind of thinking has evolved over the years, becoming more and more base, more and more intense, less and less democratic, less and less just, less and less interested in equality and fairness and all these kinds of things. That we keep hoping they understand. They don't care. They do not come from a class of people with a history of caring and sharing. They don't do those things well. They take everything and arrogate it unto themselves as their personal possessions. And now the task is to contain your anger, to keep you quiet, and to keep them always on top. There are people who truly believe, and they're friends of mine among them, who truly believe that if we hang in there long enough with this system as it is, at some point, they'll see the light. I'm laughing because it is laughable, really. They'll see the light. They'll see that there is no advantage to going the way we are going. Well, you're wrong on that score. They see every advantage to doing the thing that we wish them not to do. So I am less worried now about them. Their attitudes and their history and their actions over centuries have remained remarkably the same. I think I would be crazy to hold out the hope that there is a possibility of dramatic change anytime soon. In fact, I just absolutely reject the notion that it would happen. It will not happen. And I just can't bring myself to jumping aboard this train and to pushing myself to be part of this, whatever this is called, this organization of politics is called, because I'm a target. You know, this is a dilemma, and I don't understand why people don't see it that way. It boggles my mind that people still do not understand what politics is in the United States. Where we are, you know, on where we located, you know, like in the office buildings, they always have a map with the elevator indicated. You are here. We don't have those to tell us where we are. This system is amorphous. It changes without notice. It does whatever it wants to do. And the tiny elite ruling things have practically absolute power. Absolute power. So people could talk all they want to me about democracy and equality and freedom and justice, and I keep looking at them. And I often want to ask them, when did you lose your brain? When did that happen to you? That you no longer can think, you no longer can make sense of the way things are organized, the way we are living. When did that happen? Your inability to make sense of the reality we're in. And we are in very deep trouble. Maybe it's because we too need to feel that things aren't so bad as to cause us to jump off the nearest bridge. Maybe we need to feel that we do have some power and influence. I say, okay, then how are you exercising that power in this country organized the way it is? What has been the sea change with poverty, for example? With housing? With education? Which communities that were considered oppressed communities today proudly declare that they no longer are oppressed? Have you heard any such thing happening? Where people can vow openly, we have progressed. Our society is changing and changing for the better. And the vast majority of people at the bottom are beginning to see a ray of hope. It's not happening. And to be even more frank about it, it won't happen. So you see to your interests. You organize in your interests. You coalesce with people who also see the advantage of joining forces and coexisting rather than not existing at all. I'm not telling you what to think. I don't want you to feel that I am. But I do want to yank the chain a little bit and say, wake up. We are at a critical moment in our society where, perhaps without warning, things will change both dramatically and permanently. And where the underclass is concerned, it's never a good thing, that kind of change. And as I've been advocating, we really have to give this idea serious consideration and a good solid try. The idea of restoring, reclaiming, rebuilding community. Now, what do I mean by community? Is it geographic? It could be, but it doesn't have to be. You could live in Manhattan and have community with people in Georgia. You see? It is forging connections with groups and with communities, other communities dealing with the same issue. That being the issue of survival. That is our number one issue, it seems to me. Yes, there are problems with education and housing and public transportation and all of that. The number one thing is our very existence is imperiled. Our very survival is imperiled. Because those things that normally are present in civilized societies are present because they help the society as a whole to progress. It adds an aspect of humanity. It gives people a sense of stasis, a stability. But we have to face this thing because it's not going away at all. The idea that this country was not meant for anyone except white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, men in particular. They control. They own everything. They dictate the pace of everything, pace of life. They decide what I am not to have, what rights I should or should not enjoy, where I can and cannot live, what the fate of my community would be with regard to inheritances and so forth. All these things they decide. And they pretend that they're not really that power hungry and overarching. But in fact, it's true. You can see the wheels turning in the direction of, you know, a white country. We theoretically had experienced and have been experiencing apartheid. It is becoming a permanent aspect of our lives. You can deny it all you want. I'm saying this is the moment in time when we have to decide whether there is merit to this or not. How do we prepare? Can we even prepare? Do we have the capacity to respond in our own interests? even as we are under the gun of all kinds of unspoken and unwritten laws that shape what we can do, where we can go, how we can live, what we do for work, what happens to our children. You think about it. And tell me if you sincerely believe that I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs just for the sake of screaming at the top of my lungs. I can tell you I have never felt this scared, this concerned, this fearful about the future. And not the distant future either, the very near future. I've never felt it more urgent to talk to as many people as I can about it, because I see it happening. This election 2020 is no ordinary election. This is no ordinary election for president. This election is a watershed moment to mark the point at which things turn in the direction that they had been planning for decades. This country is on schedule for a massive rupture. But I gotta give them credit. They're managing it very well because they have people who are so disillusioned, so fooled with this idea, you know, this is a democracy. Such awful things could not happen here. Well, I tell you, as I said, I was, as you know, in New York recently. And just in the ride into Manhattan, from Brooklyn and through Queens, nobody has to tell me the truth of what is happening. I saw it with my own eyes. A city in strategic disintegration. What do I mean by that? Neighborhoods are disappearing. Neighborhoods are falling apart. Neighborhoods are experiencing tremendous pressure. Great displacement is going on. Rules are changing. People are being taxed out of their homes. And you could literally sense the tension of living. They're trying to make it look like they're coping, but you can see immediately that they're not. Because this new order is coming into fruition, not just in New York. It happened in Washington, D.C. I remember I used to live in Washington, D.C. when it was a black town, essentially. It isn't anymore. And it's not that you don't expect things to change, but you see how directed change is. You see what is considered as a change, what ought to happen with within this process of change, the wholesale wiping out of people and their capacity to support themselves, to live, to provide for their families, their children, let alone the next generation or two. That can't happen in most communities now. So I'm saying we have to get real about this thing. We've got to see what is happening here. And, you know, people may be reluctant to do it or they may outright deny it. But that doesn't mean that it isn't happening. That doesn't mean that there is a plan afoot. That doesn't mean that people don't have designs. So we've got to get into putting up our lines of defense now. How do we reclaim community? How do we address that question? You've heard me say time and again on this program, a very simple thing. I'll say it again. The idea of beautifying where you live. It's a very political act to plant saplings, to plant flowers, to clean up your block, get rid of all that garbage and litter that's flying around under your feet, to make a statement that everybody would understand implicitly. These folks who live here intend to live here. They belong here. And the beauty that you see is our beauty. We like our neighborhoods. We like living where we live. We are not targets for displacement. We literally are planting our roots again here. We're providing a safe place for our children to play, or that people could walk on our block. We don't need this business of always living in a police state, depending on the cops. It means that we acquiesce to lawlessness. We have to do something about that. Why do we have so many 24-hour delis and bodegas in our neighborhoods? It's a sign that your neighborhood is out of control. No neighborhood that is in control of itself allows its peace to be disturbed by 24-hour-a-day operation of businesses. And we know they're not selling almond milk 24 hours a day. It's an invasion of another sort. People are reading things. This is a neighborhood where anything goes. Which well-run, well-regulated community do you know of that has a bodega on every corner and they open 24 hours a day? I'm not anti-bodega, but I'm saying This is where you live. And you should make the rules. You make the rules. You know that many of these bodegas are fronts for drug operations and illegal activity. And they come straight in your neighborhood, in your face, and defy you to do something about it. No neighborhood that has some sense of order. Do you see this kind of craziness going on? And what is the taxpayer-supported service of the police department doing in your neighborhoods? Who is moving in? I talked not too long ago about the vigorous onslaught occurring in black neighborhoods in Manhattan, as in Harlem and Washington Heights, and even the Lower East Side. And you have silence. People's homes are literally being taken from them. And there is no response, no coordinated response from the community, which means the community is out of order. The community is fragmented. The community is open to attacks of all kinds, and it is happening. You know, and a friend of mine lives in a community in New Rochelle and had a birthday party for her daughter. And they brought in, you know, the bounce house and the, you know, the things that kids like. Okay. And do you not know that promptly, at 5:30, the local authorities showed up to remind them that by 6 o'clock, everything is to be shut down, packed up, and you're gone. Well, of course, it caused a great deal of a problem. People were saying, well, it's for the children. Why are you being so mean? They're not being mean. They have their way of containing any encroachment on the way they choose to live their lives. Laws are made based on how they choose to live their lives. And by 6 o'clock, all noise should cease. Because this is the nature of the neighborhood they want. A residential neighborhood means it's a neighborhood with residents, not loud people. That's a sign of community. People decide on what will be their standard of life. And they see to it. And as you go further and further with this argument, you see that it has to do with expressing your power and your discipline over yourself. This is the meaning of community. You have your own power, and you're exercising it. I want us to really think about what is happening. This rapid and dramatic deterioration of our communities. And, you know, you need to talk to somebody from Chicago or talk to somebody from Detroit or Philadelphia or Baltimore who has lived there for quite some time and who still is shell-shocked about the rapid decline of their neighborhoods and the seeming inevitability that they will not bounce back until the population is changed. They can't believe it. They can't believe it. Well, where are they going to go? We don't know. They'll have to find a place. The thing is, though, that when these changes began, they were completely unprotected, unorganized. They couldn't imagine that the onslaught would be so dramatic and so vicious in such a short time. But if you do understand the politics of the United States, how it undergirds a very nefarious social order, it begins to make sense. And yes, indeed, you can anticipate these changes because they are inevitable. None of this is a surprise. It's inevitable that things would go a certain way. But we are not prepared. And we are seeing a collateral development that even whites in our society, who heretofore had enjoyed some degree of protection against these social changes, they too are becoming more and more susceptible to attack. How are we going to figure this out? It's not like it's not going to happen. That's my point. It is going to happen. It is going to happen. So what do we do? How do we reconstruct community and reclaim community as part, as a necessary part to our communal survival, prosperity, and progress? Let's take a break here and come back and we'll finish up.
Maybe in a year after. Instead of tears, I learn all about laughter. But meanwhile, I'm stuck out here. There's no man's land out here. But I know, yes, I know, there must be a better world somewhere.
Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eucrice Lead, and we're continuing with this series of discussions that we've been having, the principal purpose of which is to get us to look at the reality that we're in and what it requires us to do in order to face the very near future, where there are going to be dramatic changes for which the vast majority of us are not prepared. But these are not ordinary changes. These would be changes that will reorder the structure of our society. We're seeing the rebirth of trenchant racism. People are open with it. From the president on down. I mean, we've not seen these things before. We've not witnessed it. We see wholesale attacks on communities. They're not saying they're wholesale attacks, but they are. How is it possible that specific geographic areas do not have children who are performing above a certain level? That's not accidental. How is it that in certain geographic areas we see it looks like a desert because close to nobody's living there anymore? The land is being made available for other things. So they're clearing as much of the land as possible and spreading it out so that pretty soon you will see a bunch of tractors and construction people, whatnot, just show up out of the blue. And next thing you know, an entirely new community is born with entirely new rules, an entirely new population. What are we saying? Why are we sitting, you know, like ducks? And we cannot see how important it is right now to our very survival. It is very important that we reclaim our neighborhoods and communities and establish communities in an unorthodox fashion. It may have nothing to do with the geographic area that you're living in. It may have to do with an interest that you share with somebody in Wisconsin, and that you committed to working in tandem with each other to improve things in both neighborhoods. We have to dispense with all the ways we used to do things, because the times have changed so dramatically. And they will continue to do so. But we will be left with no viable response. We are looking at our, you know, we will be erased. We know what they are planning. We know what the mood of the country is right now. We haven't seen these things before. And that is because the opposition has been emboldened. They keep trying this, it works, so they try that, it works even better. And all the while we're sitting there wondering what's going to come next. What's going to come next is you and me. And we have to make a stand. We have to help ourselves out of this dilemma. It's already bad on practically every front, economically, educationally, etc., business-wise. Harlem had a a very active business infrastructure. You didn't have to leave Harlem to buy fish or to get your shoes fixed or to go to the dentist or to get your hair done. It was, in many ways, an exciting community. And that's why even the mobsters, when they aimed for Harlem, they had to think several times about that, because the community was tight. The community was on point. The community was not, it was not lost on the community that changes were coming. But they appreciated what they had and supported what they had, because for one thing, we had racism was so pervasive, people did not want to leave the safety zones of their own communities to venture out anywhere, to go shopping or do anything. So in a sense, the unintended benefit was that communities were self-sustaining. It does not look like that in Harlem anymore. For years, it hasn't looked like that. And Harlem is poised right now for full-blown, not just invasion, but annihilation. And that is a template for what is going on all over the country. All over the country, communities are being assailed for the next move. Except that we will not be part of the next move. We will be moved out. The next move will belong to the power elite. They could get anything done that they want done. In preparation, for example, for this next move, Harlem gets a whole new subway line. They're doing that now. They're constructing all kinds of new modern buildings with new configurations for sharing space between the private sector and residents. Oh, they're coming up with models. We must move aggressively on this matter of creating community. As I said, community meaning safe places where you can live and work and prosper. Community meaning where you can join with others who understand the ramifications of the kinds of politics we will next practice in this country. Community meaning that we set out in very deliberate ways to erect these lines of defense so that they can assure our intention even to live, what we want to do, what we choose to do. Community in that it fosters solidarity with each other, which we have all but lost. These are the very different ways in which we function within the confines of this word community, as we rebuild and reclaim community. We should be in touch with people all over the country, setting up small farms and a distribution system, and people making clothing and products that are useful in the household. These things are all very viable and very doable if we have community. We will know how to deal with people who intend to go against the grain of our community, to bring us all down, to exploit us. We need community. We're very good, you know, we respond when the call goes out and there's an urgent matter that needs to be addressed, such as in the shooting of a person by a police officer. We respond, but we don't sustain the response. We have no appropriate context for such a response. We have to learn to do things differently, is what I'm saying. We cannot enter into the very near future with the same old ways of doing things. It would not help us. We have to have new vision. We have to be bold in taking our stances. We have to decide whether we are going to have our own way of doing things, or whether we're going to play along to get along, whether we participate in our own demise. Is this something we want to do? No. We have to act now. We have to have these conversations now. We have to be thinking now about how we protect our future. If we don't do it now, I'm telling you, I don't see that we will survive in the way that we should. Making decisions about what happens within the confines of our community, regulating our community ourselves, having goods and services, including things like schools, that are first class. This is how we ought to be thinking. And we move away from what is going on now, which is the big distraction, in which we are supposed to be as obsessed as some other people are about the presidential election. That's their business. And for another 20 years, they'll know exactly how the elections are to be run, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's we who don't know what we're doing. We are like the flotsam and jetsam floating on the ocean, being carried along with the current. We have nothing of our own. We have no effort of our own to protect us. And I'm telling you, it is going to be a slaughter. The fight will be for land. The fight will be over housing. The fight will be for education and resources that we used to think belonged to the community. Oh no. Not anymore. That's coming. We will lose much of our identity because not having community, you have nobody to share your culture with. We will lose direct control over our lives. That's already here. And we will enter into a very vicious cycle in which every day would be a struggle for what? Survival. I said we ought to not go there. We don't have to go there. But we must talk to each other. We must discuss these things. We must come up with templates for survival and make them work. Or else, you know, it's over. Well, I want to thank you so much for bearing with us. Our phones are going to be up and functioning on Monday. God willing, and the creek don't rise. And I'm hoping that we put more effort and energy into thinking and understanding that we have a job to do to protect ourselves. It's a weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things into your life. And we see each other Monday. Bye-bye.
There must be a better world somewhere. Flying high. Some joker clips my wings just 'cause he gets his kicks.